If green is your favourite colour or your way of living, then Grounded is the place for you. From big environmental solutions to your own backyard, wherever in the universe you may be, join me, Melanie Walker, on a journey to a cleaner, greener life. Grounded, your window on the environment. And a very good day to you. And it has been a while, and now we're sitting in the depths of winter. But we're going to find out about everything that is warm and sparkly from our associate who comes from Life as a Garden. And of course, that's Carrie Goodwin. How are you doing? It's been a while.
It has been a very long time. I'm doing really, really well. Actually, I'm loving the cold. I think I'm one of those few people. And it's my favorite because our managers send us a pansy report. Mm-hmm. So, you know, most people wake up in the morning and they look at the weather report and they go, oh my goodness, it's minus this. And I get this beautiful photo of a frozen pansy. And then I can tell how cold it's going to be or how cold it's been at night, depending on how frozen the pansy is. And I think it's awesome.
But that's an amazing thing. Everybody thinks, oh no, my poor little pansies are going to get frozen. And it's one of those things that they like, they get frozen and then the sun comes up and then the ice melts and they're absolutely fine.
Yeah. And I mean, at the Wine Garden Center on the weekend, to me, it didn't feel cold enough because our pansies didn't freeze. And I'm like, oh, this is not cold enough. Why are we not frozen? And the team are like, please, it's enough now.
It's been hitting -7 in Johannesburg. This is Joe Friesenberg.
I know, but it's just lovely. Our plants really needed it. And it's, I want to say it's a touch and a go because they needed it for, we're going to get rid of all the pests.
Yeah.
And almost to rejuvenate. I feel even our souls are going to be rejuvenated because they were maybe a little bit frozen and everything was just really hard. And now, spring is around the corner and that anticipation.
Is it around the corner? My children are saying, Mom, how much longer is there of winter? And I'm like, well, at least another month, maybe a month and a half until we actually go into like decent weather again, where it's not, where our house is not a morgue.
And that would be the same as my house.
But the thing is that, we've always said that it's better to have a really cold winter for the gardens. And people are like, how can cold be beneficial for gardens? But it is. It really is actually something that we as gardeners are thinking fantastic because it gets rid of all the bad stuff.
And we had so many bad pests last week. You know, last year it was...
First time ever I got those horrible black and yellow lily borers. And I was devastated.
Yes, and thrips and white fly. And we just needed the cold to actually zap those in a natural way. You know, we don't want to put all the pesticides down. And I think the insects are actually becoming more and more resistant to pesticides. So we need natural ways to try and get rid of them. The best. And so that's definitely what the cold has done. And some plants are going to thrive from the cold. You know, I mean, I looked at some of our Plectranthus even, and they got burnt on the top, and your Geranth has gone a bit of black. But it actually means that us as gardeners are going to have to go outside, get a pair of secateurs towards the end of August.
Towards the end, yes.
Not now.
I was going to say, don't cut them now because they actually that's protecting the rest of the plant. Yeah.
So let them protect the rest of the plant. And then at the end of August, go and get your pair of secateurs and just give them a little bit of a haircut because otherwise you just let it grow long and leggy. And the plant is saying, actually, I really just want new growth. Please stimulate new growth for me. And us as humans, I think sometimes, I know... Until you have that pair of secateurs in your hand, I think, you'll be okay. And now I'm forced to go and put the pair of secateurs in my hand. And then, goodness gracious, the whole garden is going to have a haircut.
Talking about secateurs, I sort of stalk all of the various gardening groups on Facebook and on Ludwig's Rose Lovers. Everybody's like, when is the right time to prune our roses? I'm like, not yet. That's all. But I'm like, I really want to go out and do this. And I'm like, okay, gardening is about patience. If you don't have any, don't be gardening. Okay. So you can imagine, I just like, I really get hectic with people. Yeah. I will let you know when you can prune your roses. I know that Ludwig's already done his. But for me, it's like, I would always go first week of August. But I'm now with the cold weather that we're happening. Yeah. I think maybe the second week of August. I've had my secateurs pruned. I will be walking around my area and I will be pruning people's roses for them.
Oh, that's very generous of you.
Yeah, but they probably don't know that it's a good thing.
And I think when it comes to the pruning, I mean, ours were also pruned probably about 2-3 weeks ago. And we've already got the new shoots coming through and then we've had this cold. So I think it is going to set them back a little bit, but they'll come back.
Yeah.
But I also think you do have to be a little bit ruthless. You know, really cut out any branches that are going into each other or into the plant and try and get everything to grow outwards in a V or a Y.
A cup shape.
Oh, a cup. That's a brilliant idea.
What you should have, either four or five of the main stems, but there must be all the ones that are facing outwards. So if there's anything crossing across the middle of the cut, of the cup, you cut that out.
Yeah.
That's the rule of thumb when it comes to pruning. Just keep your thumb out the way.
Yeah. But, and also don't only do it for roses. Look at all your plants and try and, because especially some of your trees, they're going to need thinning out. And, you know, it
I'm sitting there thinking, I really need to do something about my flowering quince. Obviously not now because it's looking absolutely beautiful at the moment. And I know where all these flowering quinces are. And I go and I look at them and just go, oh my goodness, you're so beautiful. I tell mine every day because I walk outside from my front door and it's right in front of me. So it really cheers me up. But I mean, this thing has been needed to be pruned for I don't know how many years. But I'm sitting there thinking, am I supposed to prune on the dead wood or am I supposed to prune on, where does it flower on dead wood or does it flower on new wood? So it's one of those things that you really do need to actually do some research before you lay into your plant.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. But let's talk about the things that make us really happy, not pruning.
Crazy for daisies.
And I was so happy driving down Homestead Avenue in Bryanston. Yeah. And there was a pavement there. And they had that, there was a succulent, that one succulent that turns kind of really, really red.
One of the Crassula campfire.
Mm. And the yellow and orange daisies were already out completely. It was completely stunning. And of course, when it comes to daisies at the moment, the first flowers have started down in Namaqualand. The wildflowers have already started really early.
That is very early.
And that's in the Bido Valley near Clan William at the Enjo Nature Farm. And they actually take people, you can go and stay at the Enjo Nature Farm. And it's near the West Coast National Park.
Beautiful.
But apparently last year there were like major traffic jams. But if you want to find out where would be, if the flowers are looking good, and remember you don't want to be going on a cloudy day because they're not open, you can get hold, there's a pop-up coffee shop on the Enjo Nature Farm, which you can Google and find out the phone number and phone them and they will tell you what the flowers are looking like.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that idea of both pop-up coffee and flowers. It's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've done only once before and went in the end of September and they were still all the way up past Clan William. We went up, to about this. We were aiming for Springbuck, which is about the only place in South Africa apart from Ohrabi's I haven't been to. But I was 5 months pregnant on the back of a motorbike.
Can understand why maybe you stopped.
Yeah, it got a little bit uncomfortable after a while. But I mean, I still got to see absolutely glorious flowers.
Yeah.
So I'd say August, towards the end of August is usually about the best time to see them, beginning of September.
Yeah, that's when we went, probably middle to end of August. And it was higher, amazing.
If you go kind of nowish, in the next few weeks, if you go up to the Richtersveld, you'll see all the succulents in flower first, because it's always around about the end of July, beginning of August that the succulents
are in
flower.
When you have those little lithops and those sort of things.
They're all
out
in their flowers. Yeah. And then you come back down the coast, back through the wildflowers.
Oh,
the
daisies. I was going to say, well, I loved when we went to the flowers, and I think it's just, again, being the gardener is how we had to, you know, normally we want things to be big and bold and in your face, but actually there you had to get down on your hands and knees and look for these little things that look like stones, and then they were actually, their flowers would pop up. So if you were there too early in the morning, they hadn't opened yet and that sort of thing. And they were just these incredible plants, but in what you would almost look at first as being completely barren. And I think how resilient plants are that they can come out and say, actually, I'm here, look for me. Just have to maybe get a magnifying glass and actually get down and dirty, not just see it from your car. You know, it can look beautiful. There will be fields that you can see from your car.
If you ever want to see some of those kind of plants, the lithops and the various succulents and things, you go onto Facebook and go and have a look for Judd Kirkle. And he's now Judd Kirkle Wellwich.
Okay.
And he has found plants all over the place. The last little enclaves of some plants that have like really disappeared. He is a plant hunter.
Oh, I like that.
And he puts up pictures of plants from all over. So, I mean, he's just found Allophorii. Okay.
I've never heard of it. Yeah.
Scarcely seen in flower in its natural home, he found it in Mpumalanga. It's, according to Sanby, only known from 6 locations considered rare and threatened. I'm like, why aren't you there? Just give me a little piece so I can grow it, okay? But he puts up all of these incredibly beautiful pictures from all over the country, and he's got the one, the Allodichotoma,
yes,
which is up in the Richtersveld, and that's one place I haven't been to yet, and I will get there. I want to do Achrabis in the Richtersveld.
Because that's when you get to see the forests of them.
Yes.
And there's just, oh, it's so beautiful.
So go and have a look at Judd Kirkle-Wellwich on Facebook and see. If you're into plants, he has got the most incredible things, like plants in, like Streptocarpus vandalurii, which is obviously one of the Cape Primrose type things, in southern Gauteng, in a rocky outcrop.
Oh, you see, now I tried to grow Streptocarpus because...
Sorry, I'm showing her pictures. That's why she's making these noises, okay?
And I think sometimes I think, oh, it can't be that difficult. I know people who just put them in a...
There's a picture of
the quiver trees. It looks almost like it's sunrise. Mm. And the makes me want to get in the car. What are we doing?
Let's go driving. Let's just do it. So, I mean, he's got pictures from all over, from the Drakensberg, the Western Cape. He goes around looking for flowers and plants.
Stunning.
And it was fascinating talking to him about the fact that, you know, you've got the lithops and all of those little succulents, and you can hardly see them. But they always, you must look out for big quartz, where there's lots of quartz.
Yes.
Because they like growing where there's lots of quartz.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to the daisies. Okay, so we can grow at home.
Yes. So the ones that we could have, well, if, when we're still on the Richtersveld, that sort of thing, would have been the mesembryanthemums, where you could have got seeds and seedlings, and they should be coming into flower now.
We just call them mesems these days, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But they're still there.
Mesembryanthemums. I mean, it's just a bit
of a tongue twister.
Yes.
But it's cool. So, and then we get the little indigenous Felicia daisy or kingfisher daisies.
I love Felicias. That blue. That's as far as I'm concerned, that's about the only true blue plant, a flower, apart from maybe plumbago, one of the plumbagos, but it's
it's true. Actually, it is one of
the very few true blue plants,
like sky blue kind of things. Yes, so that's definitely one, and they come in the white and the variegated leaf and indigenous, which is nice. And then we've got, I always love the agaranthinums in a good old fashioned daisy bushes.
Daisies, yeah. Or the yellow ones. But they sell seed everywhere. I don't even know who planted them on my verge. But then I'm always pulling them out. And then they managed to somehow, during the rain, some of the seeds came down the side of my house and they've planted themselves in my back garden as well.
So I think it's fascinating because as a gardening industry, we battle to find the good old-fashioned single yellow daisy. Now we've got these beautiful, but they're all double flowering or shorter and compact. And so it's just the evolution of the daisy, how it was that simple single flower yellow. Now you do get single flowers, pinks and whites, but you get a crested merlot and a beautiful sunshine yellow. And, you know, I love the names of plants as well.
As you can tell, you sound just like Andy McDowell in Green Card when she starts talking about the flowers in the wonderful conservatory that she's now gotten her hands on.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's a beautiful movie with Gérard Depardieu.
Okay, yeah, I remember now. And then the osteos. I mean, we can't even go into all the names of the osteos.
The osteos
but they are
my favorite summer plant.
Yeah.
I think that they are, without any doubt, nonpareil in amongst the world of flowers.
Yeah, and I mean, they just come in so many varieties of color that you spoiled for choice. But I think it's so funny because, again, it goes to different breeding. So I managed to get two from a grower out near Hartbeespoort. And he said, these are really, really hardy, don't need any attention, just pop them in your garden, but they need full sun. You know, all your daisies do need full sun.
Oh, they all need full sun, yeah.
So I was like, okay, I gave one to my mum and one to me, popped mine in my garden, and I think, which is surprising for me, but I'm thinking I'm killing it with too much tender loving care, and maybe it's not getting enough sun, because it looks really unhappy.
Mm.
And then my mom's is in a pot that she's just put like on the side of nowhere, and it's just masses of flowers.
You do kill them with kindness sometimes. Yeah. A lot of plants, indoor plants, my orchids. I managed to kill my orchids from when I suddenly found out, oh, this is what you should do with orchids. They all decided that I had no clue. They were all fine. I didn't know what to do with them. Bring them inside at this time of the year, take them back out.
Yeah.
And they were fantastic.
Now that you actually follow the instructions. So I think daisies are very similar. They don't need a lot of tender loving care, you know, and they probably flower better if you're not watering them too frequently. Maybe, especially now when it's so cold, you're going to water them, I would say, probably once every fourth day or so, if that. Mm. And really hot and dry, you know, we always say it's a good idea to plant with compost, but
They're like sandier soil.
A bit of a sandy soil. So, yeah. And as I say, I love the osteos because even at the nursery now, they phoned me and they said, there's just bees everywhere. Come with your camera and take photos of the bees.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So all the daisies are going to attract a wonderful variety of bees. They're going to attract butterflies to your gardens later on in the season. And they just keep going. You know, if they finish flowering, then you can just cut them back a little bit, chop off the top 10 centimeters, and then give them a few months and they'll come back again.
Mm.
So it's not only for spring flowering. They just keep going on and on and on. And even with this cold, one of my neighbors has got beautiful, good old-fashioned daisy bushes. And they just form a ball of flowers.
Mm.
And they've just kept flowering. I was looking at it and thinking, how are you still flowering now? Because it takes so much energy to flower. To me, it's like those people who just keep doing exercise. How do they manage?
We just have to get up and do it, Carrie. Unfortunately, let's not talk about that right now. Okay.
But daisy bushes, they don't require a lot of exercise or anything. You know, they're just going to perform for you, which is really, really stunning. I love it. So, yeah, those are all the different types, I think. Oh, no, we forgot. We forgot the English daisy, which is Bellis perennis.
Bellis perennis. They look like licorice all sorts.
Yum.
They look like sweeties. There's certain plants that look like sweeties.
Yes.
And that's one of them. That just like a Gerbera as well.
Yeah.
I always think that they look like sweeties too, like jelly tots.
I'm just thinking of all the yummy sweets, actually. Yes. Yeah, we've got the Bellis perennis, pinks and whites.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they're doing beautifully. A lot of people underplant their roses with them. So once you've pruned your roses, then you have these beautiful Bellis perennis popping up all over the place. And then what else? Oh, and Euryops.
Mm.
So I also think Euryops is interesting because the traditional one is the good old-fashioned gray one.
Yeah.
So you've got that lovely gray foliage and then the bright yellow flower.
Yeah.
And now you get the green one as well. But I'm battling to find the green one again. I can only seem to find the gray one. So I think it's how plants evolve and, you know, get changed. And then you have to really go and look for certain plants.
Mm.
I was with a grower yesterday and he specializes in citrus. And I thought what was fascinating for him is he also lost some of his varieties at one stage. So now he's planted a citrus orchard at the bottom of their property. And he's just got every single type of citrus he's ever come across. And he's put them there. And he says, so at least I'm never going to lose a variety again. And I thought, that's what it is. You do have to keep these things precious.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
So even like you were saying with the aloe, it's wonderful to have them out in the wild, but you might have to have some in... No, that's what Andy DeVette does so well.
Yes.
Is to just.
Oh, my goodness. His aloes are so amazing.
Yeah.
Going out there. I haven't been out this year. I was there last year. Oh, my goodness. The aloe farm just is. Now, at the moment, I've seen pictures. It's looking amazing.
Yeah. I've been twice.
Oh, lordy.
I was going to say, we even have aloes in the own garden center, but you still have to just go out and appreciate all the sunbirds and what he's managed to do on the property.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
I've always taken pictures of all the aloes that I come across. I'm like my friend. I'm sure she's getting sick of it. And we go walking. Look at that aloe. Hello, we have to stop and take photographs of it from every single angle.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get a little bit, hello, hello, hello. A bit strange. Just a little bit strange.
But it's good for the bees.
Very good for the bees.
All the
so
nectar
happy.
That they are collecting at the moment. Because we also, it was interesting, a lot of customers are starting to plant for bees.
Mm.
So, I mean, I know it's going there, but now they've got like, they say, oh, I've got a beehive or my neighbor's got a beehive, need to put plants out.
Yeah. Indigenous floriferous.
Mm. Yep. But even things like some of the macadamia nut growers, they're actually using things like lavender. So they plant in a lot of lavender because it's really good for bees, and they plant in perennial basil, which I also thought was fascinating.
Yeah, but that gets really big. I mean, I've seen perennial basil that's like over 6 feet tall, you know.
And it's beautiful because it's always filled with bees.
Mm.
So I think you do have to have those sort of things in your garden and nice and fragrant as well.
But of course, for those people who don't have a lot of water in their areas, whenever you look at a plant like the Euryops would be perfect for there because the fact that they've got the gray foliage, that they're slightly tougher, that some of the plants that have got little hairs on them, so your lamb's ears, things like that, those are actually very water-wise plants.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I get asked so often. My verge doesn't get a lot of water. What can I plant? And I just give them all the hardiest ones, water-wise ones.
Yeah, and I think that's what you should be doing on the verges. Sometimes, and I want to say it's a bit of a catch-22 because where I live, they're replacing a lot of what was grassland and they put in succulents. But I feel a bit like I'm moved to Arizona. And I love the grassland because I liked all the seeds that the birds would have got from the grasses. So I'm like, it looks very beautiful and it's very water wise. But I love biodiversity. So I think, you know, even when you're doing little things on your verges, especially, plant for everybody. Plant for a little bit for the birds, a little bit for the bees, a little bit for the spiders.
But, but who's the seed company who's brought out the scatter pack, which has got the seeds, the grass seeds and the, like...
Mayfit.
Is it Mayfit that brought it? It's got the grass seeds and it's got flower seeds in it. So I'm not quite sure which flower, but there's some daisies and the ones that you'd find in the felt. And you can actually just use that and you'll grow back a felt area again. You can rewild. Yeah,
so I think, well, Mayfit has three different types of, more specializes in grass.
Yeah.
Starkes has a lovely bee variety of grass seeds so that you could do. Starkes also has a water-wise one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
it's so easy these days. Yeah. You know, just go and scatter a pack of seeds and next thing you have this incredible... Because we in Johannesburg specifically, this is a grassland.
Mm.
So yes, it's lovely. I also have lots and lots of succulents all over the place because you don't have to worry about them. But I like being out in the veld.
Me too. I really do love it. But I think you can have both. And I think every garden should have a little bit of everything. But maybe it makes it too much like a smarty box. And I mean, one of the next thing that Life as a Garden was going to talk about was hedging.
I was going to say, with a smarty box, you got to have those definitions there so you can keep your sweets in the right place so that they don't move into the wrong places.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you start talking about hedges, you've got, I mean, my favorite, as soon as people start asking for hedges, I'm like, oh, are you trying to block out a neighbor? And it's very true, but then you forget about all the little hedges. So again, that you could plant like lavender dentata as a low hedge.
Yes.
That will be beautiful, fragrant.
You can use it.
And rosemary. You know, and then, but then you could also get your traditional buxus as an English hedge. Mm. And those are to separate out, as you say, your smarty box. They're not to hide your neighbors. They're to just demarcate different areas in your garden. The thing that you could also use if you're going for the more succulent look is the speckworm.
Yes.
You know, which is going to be our tree of the year when we'll talk about it next month. But that makes a great hedge. And it can be any size.
One of the nicest I've seen for something even from that height, a little bit higher even, is the saltbush.
Yes. Now, you know, Life as a Garden spoke about that and I'm like, what? He's going to use that little gray foliage
that looks
like a little bit of a wave in it. So it's got quite a nice texture as a hedge. So I am very impressed.
I love it. And I've seen people who have also done it with Mpepo, Helichrysum, where they've hedged with the Helichrysum as well.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And those gray hedges just look so sexy.
Well, I also think because then the other plants contrast against them. So whether you've got your green foliage contrasting or a bright yellow poppy or your Eureops, you know, you've got that lovely, it just forms a beautiful and very modern color as a backdrop. I mean, and then if you wanted to do like a step of hedges, you could have a lower Helichrysum and then do something like an Abelia.
Yes.
Or a Duranta. So then you get that gray and gold kind of color. So those are all your lower hedges. But then I say that it's lower. Like I always think of Abelia. And when we sell it, you know, we don't sell it much bigger than 40 centimeters at the most. But when you put it into a hedge, it grows into a beautiful like 1.2 meter hedge with the little white flowers on. And you can get the plain green one, which is the Grandiflora, or you get the golden one. So there's quite a lot of different Abelias even that you could use to get different heights.
Lemon and lime.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. It. So, and at least they don't get frosted, which is also a very nice thing.
Mine's looking fantastic at the moment. And then, of course, for the taller ones, everybody's always on about viburnum.
Well, that's the debate that I was having with my mum because we've just planted a Freylinia hedge.
Which is fantastic. So, it takes a while to get fully there and bushy and everything.
So I was saying to her, you know, the Freylinia hedge looks okay, but then I was comparing it to the beautiful viburnum hedge, which we use almost as a fence.
Mm.
And it is full and thick and the big leaves kind of, you know, that glossy green. And she says, yeah, Kaz, but that's 20 years old and your Freylinia hedge you just planted. So you're not comparing apples with apples. I said, but I never really had respect for viburnum as a plant.
Mm.
It just didn't used to jump out at me and say, I'm a really nice hedging plant. But when you see it done properly, then it almost, you could take away the fence because the viburnum actually is an impenetrable. That, thank you very much. You see, talk about tongue twisters.
But I found that, I mean, I've said to a couple of people when they've had hedges and they've got kind of a little bit sort of, and we're talking about like over 2 meter high tall. Okay. And they look a little bit sparse. So I said, well, why don't you just plant some plumbago and then let the plumbago grow through the hedge and you keep that as well, because then you get the blue flowers that come through.
Oh, nice.
Which would be really pleasant. But my favorite hedging thing, which I saw out at the Moon and Sixpence, is the Pittosporum, but the nigra, the one with the black stem. As a hedge.
I love that.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I love it and more than anything.
And that's quite a fast grower.
Yeah. So and of course with the mottled leaves as well in the cream and green.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That is just the way to go.
That is a really, really beautiful, beautiful hedge to put in. And oh, no, actually, now you're making me think of all these different ones that we could use. You know, you also get your, but again, it's a slow one, but works really nicely is your yellowwoods.
Mm.
And then I know I'm going to feel like I might be swearing here, but not swearing, is conifers are making a huge comeback. You see, I knew it was almost like swearing.
I've said, and once again, Out at the Moon and Sixpence is about, I think, the only place that I've actually seen the conifers. I'm lying. They're also at Mulligatawny, where they've taken the dark green skyrockets at Moon and Sixpence, and it's an entire area. But they have been, they're like almost graded down, so it looks like organ pipes.
Oh,
it's just
wow.
outside the little chapel that they have there. And then they've used them at Mulligatawny behind the altar of the outdoor church, the cathedral is there. And it looks like the organ pipes.
Oh, beautiful.
So I love it like that. Look, there are some conifers that I do try and like them. I really do try to like them, but no.
I think we've written them off for very many years. I would say at least 15 years, you know, conifers have really not been in fashion. They're not something, it's almost like the palm trees. And both of them are sort of making a comeback, I think, for specific reasons. So if you're looking for a structural plant or as a hedging, there's certain varieties of conifers that can either form the loose hedge or, like you say, the organ pipe hedge. So just look for the different ones that you might be looking for.
Sandra
and what's
O
suited
had it
to
right.
your garden.
I'm sorry, Sandra O had it right in Under the Tuscan Sun, where she's standing there and she's looking, she says, I don't like these trees, creepy Italian trees.
You see, I think it's a complete opposite when you drive out to, say, Bristol Cone.
Yes.
And he's got those incredible.
It does look amazing.
And I'm thinking, why do we need a fence when you can have a plant like this? You know, and the other one that I always love as a hedge, and again is a very, very good deterrent in terms of fencing, is your Dovialis, your Kai apple. I mean, I think anybody who tries spikes. To jump over a Kai apple fence is going to be out of your garden in a flash.
With the num-nums as well.
Yes.
Like they do.
And they make a really nice high, either knee-high or tall hedge.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's just so many varieties that you can either use to control your plants, control your pets.
Or control anybody else coming into your property.
Exactly.
There we go. Keep everything neat and tidy.
Yes, that's it.
Okay, now we are getting running through this at a rate of knots.
Okay, we're not finished yet.
We're not finished yet.
Okay, so the other thing, which is really important for August, and I think we were talking about Children's Day the other day.
Yes.
And I said to my niece and nephew, you know, every day is a Children's Day. But in August, we have Women's Day. And then I think, well, actually, I always think the whole of August should be Women's Month. But
every day should be Women's Day, Carrie. Come on.
Yeah. So anyway, Life as a Garden has a really different activity when you're going to go visit a hardware and get some concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to make a concrete planter out of your hand. So you get the concrete, you mix it together, you use your spade, and then you fill in plastic gloves.
Oh, the ones that we've been using to keep our hands clean during COVID.
Okay. Yes, that sort of thing. Yeah. So maybe instead of throwing them away straight away, fill it with concrete and make a planter, because it's all to do with, you know, women and how we are the strength and holding the world together, or holding your family together, or just maybe holding hands. So you could get your two hands and put them together, or maybe your kids could get involved and put their hands. And so you fill these gloves with concrete and make different shapes and put them into a pot form. And then later on, you could plant a little succulent into it, or, you know, quite if you were going to put it inside, you could put an air plant into it. And I thought, that's really quite cool.
Yeah.
I quite like that alternative, because, you know, trying to find plant holders. That's it, yeah. And especially something different. Whereas this, you could paint any color that you like. You could, as I was saying to you, paint the fingernails.
I'm sitting and saying, well, gardeners don't have nails.
Yeah, so maybe your planter could have the nails, the gorgeous colors that you're looking for. And then the fact that you could put the plant that you love the most in, you know, and it could be your hand holding that plant.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I might be trying that myself on one of these days during August to see, because I was going to say, I'm actually loving the moment at filling my house with plants. It's just one of my favorite things, because the gardener said to me, you know, please stop bringing plants to put into your garden. There's no more space.
So now you're filling up your house with them.
I'm filling up my house.
My house is full of them as well. The only problem is that the children don't look after them. I end up doing it, which is very annoying.
Yeah, but it's still, it brings a different sort of life.
Yes.
You know, I feel like I'm a plant parent. I love all these plant terminology. So like you were talking about a plant hunter. You know, how different is that to the hunter that we grew up with? And whenever I describe, you know, hunter with my dad, we're definitely going to be thinking of different things, because now I'm going to be thinking of Judd Kirkle.
And he's going to be thinking of the biggest bush ranger.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I just think, you know, I love that. And as I say, to do an activity that's actually quite out the box and planting with, maybe you're going to look for a xerophyte, so that could be the succulents, or one with grows in the air. What is
a... I'm going to leave you to this one, Tillandsia, and I'll put you out of your
misery. Oh, thank you. You see. So there's just so many different things that you could do. And I love that August. We almost forgot to talk about the wind. Please be careful of the wind.
Stake plants. If you put trees in, saplings, whatever, anything, if your dahlias, or your dahlias shouldn't be in the, like, planted at the moment, but anything that's coming up, and at this stage, your taller plants, the indigenous flowering bulbs should be coming through, which will be your tritonias, your spiraxis. You might need to, and I just have these lovely little bamboo sticks.
Oh, yes, yeah. Very
which
good.
I stake with those. And old stockings, my girls' school stockings, because I don't wear stockings. Nice. And, you know, just using that so that it doesn't rub against the stem, and it just holds it in place and everything. So do that when the winds come up.
Yes. I think one of the things you have to be careful of, I saw it when I was driving and stopped at a parking lot, is some people use cable ties.
Mm-mm.
Please don't use cable ties, because it cuts into the plants when the wind starts blowing against them and you break in that cambium, that protection layer of the plant. So stockings is a great idea, or, you know, recycle your plastic bag and cut it into strips and put it on. Something not so harsh as cable ties.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Something that's got a little bit of give to it.
And then you'll just see your plants will be so much happier. Even your standard roses, definitely support those. Oh, yeah, just go and walk around your garden and see what you can do to give a little bit of a boost.
You're saying a lot of stuff that sounds an awful lot like exercise.
I'm loving that part of it. You know, you won't believe it, but I actually am stepping outside beyond my garden and walking a little bit. But it's because I'm going to explore everybody else's gardens. I can now see why you like walking around the neighborhood so much.
And take different streets every single time just so I can look. I can go and like... It's in a way the same as going onto Facebook and like stalking people and go and stalk. You found, oh, look what they've got there. And you go and see what it's doing at this time of the year and that time of the year. I know where all the best Pride of India trees are and where you can go and get mulberries. And
You see, that's what I'm going to start doing. I tried it on a bicycle and the bike went too fast for me to admire all the plants. So I'm like, this is not good.
Like gardening, you've got to be patient, walking nice and slow. Take it slow every now and then. That's the way to go.
I think it's just to enjoy our environment. You know, that's what it is. We have a beautiful, beautiful country. And go and explore it. Go and see what you can find in your local neighborhood.
Absolutely. Now, of course, if you've got any questions, anybody out there wants to know anything, first of all, you can find a lot of really great information on the lifeisagarden.co.za website.
Yeah, that's where they're going crazy for daisies.
Yep. And so you can go and read about all the stuff we've been talking about in a lot more depth. Yeah. You can also, if you have a gardening question, send it through. And then it actually ends up at me.
Yay, because you're a wealth of knowledge.
It's so good to see you. You again.
It
we'll
is
catch up
lovely.
With you again in August month when we'll start talking about spring flowers and everything that's coming through in September.
This is it.
But take care, walk more, stay warm, and above all, everybody, please just stay grounded. Bye bye. You've been listening to another episode of Grounded from Solid Gold Studios in Johannesburg. For more green ideas and events, pop along to Mel's Treasures on Facebook.